Interview with Reena, conducted by Pankhuri Zaheer. Introduce yourself a little bit. Where are you from?
So this is the recording that will go on.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm Reena Gattuso. I'm from the United States. I'm from Frenchtown, New Jersey.
Okay.
And I've been at JNU for the past 3-4 years. So I first came in 2013 as an exchange student. Then I was a Fulbright scholar here for a year. And now I'm finishing my MA.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about your family. Who's at home?
So I'm the second of three daughters. My mom and dad are there. My two sisters are working. I'm the only one in India.
So we'll be talking about the Gorilla Dhaba and how it came about.
Yeah.
Tell me about the trigger event. Like, what happened right at the beginning? Yeah. Why it was taken on?
So this is not, it's not necessarily a movement, yeah, but it was a kind of collective project which I think channeled a lot of energies and anxieties around particular issues. So it was like a political intervention at a point of time on campus when a lot of other things weren't going on. So what happened? Basically, ever since this current administration has come into JNU, there's been a change about of a lot of the social life on campus, the political life on campus, and both of those things are sort of interwoven. So there's been generally more restriction. The guards have been empowered to be a lot more, I think, repressive. There's been more moral policing of women and a general sense of unease, especially for activists, for people who are involved in politics. And the imposition of a certain like notion of discipline and productivity on the campus, what with measures like attendance, which weren't there before. And so since last year, the dhabas historically, I mean, at one point in time, they were open all night, right? Hmm. There was a 24/7 dhaba that was 24/7. Then last year, a lot of them, since I came to JNU, were open till say 2, 3 a.m., 4 a.m. maybe. And it's a really nocturnal campus in that sense. And it's a very free space. And it's generally, in terms of mobility, it's a fairly safe space for women, particularly, historically. Especially compared to just Delhi at large, like you can walk around by yourself at night without really feeling fear. And a lot of that is enabled by this sort of dhaba culture, which people extol and celebrate to the point of stereotype, but it's a real thing. It's a really important thing that these dhabas were open till say 3, 4 a.m. And so you could always leave the hostel, sit there, talk, have tea. And there's a kind of sociality also that develops there, which is very political because, I mean, my way of thinking about JNU was always like as an American coming to India, there are certain cultural sort of norms and ways of socializing and relating to other people. So like this stereotype, but I think it's true that like India is a more communitarian culture. So you'll share your food in a way you won't in US. You'll be more comfortable just like in close proximity to other people in ways that Americans kind of aren't. You'll eat off the same plate with a friend when an American really wouldn't. And in JNU, like, in some contexts, those norms can be part of sort of the patriarchal family and the sort of casteist family and the upkeep of those boundaries by saying, you know, you must stick to the family, and it becomes a kind of policing. But in a space where there is at least an aspiration toward radical politics, that sort of communitarian norm can become very radical. Mm-hmm. So I always thought of JNU as the space where, like, these things, which otherwise can be very regressive broadly in Indian society, like this idea of the collective, can actually become a really progressive thing because it's politicized. Mm-hmm. And it's attached to certain critiques of caste, certain critiques of capital, of gender. So the dhabas were kind of that idea, like this space of sociality, which doesn't mean there weren't problems in terms of gender, in terms of mobility. There are obviously like serious harassment problems here as there are anywhere, but you had a certain public meeting space. And so when the timings were reduced to 11, it not only was a reduction in that space of sociality, it also hit the dhaba workers and owners pretty hard financially, but it also, we primarily understood it as an act of hostility toward women and an impediment toward women's mobility. Especially because JNU is one of the few campuses in India where there's not hostel curfews, and especially hostel curfews which are used to police women, and where the restrictions on entering and exiting hostels are fairly non-restrictive. So men still can't go into women's hostels, but women mostly can go into men's hostels. And periodically, that's more or less enforced. In the past couple years, that has been, there's been a trend to clamp down on women's presence in male hostels a bit more, but still it's pretty accessible. And so we interpreted the closing of the dhabas as basically making the campus space more hostile for women at night. Mm-hmm. Because when you don't have people there, then you don't have anyone to turn to, right? And this also came in the same semester, like this came the end of last year, but it was sort of enacted in this monsoon semester, and that was when the GS cache also was scrapped. So the GS cache was the gender sensitization committee against sexual harassment, and that was basically responsible for sensitization education, mediation, and adjudication on issues of sexual harassment, incident of sexual harassment on the campus. And obviously, like any body of the sort, it had its flaws, but it was a democratic body, and it had come into being after a student struggle, and there was a lot of, it was a very well thought out kind of body. It was a pretty admirable system. Mm-hmm. And that was unilaterally scrapped by the administration under very questionable circumstances. And the administration claimed that they scrapped it because they wanted to implement their own body, which would be in compliance with UGC, so like national level regulations, even though the GS cache body was actually in compliance with those regulations and in fact went above and beyond. So the scrapping of the GS cache, I think a lot of us felt that that was an active kind of hostility, an expression of hostility toward women.
Right. So to what extent were you involved in Gorilla?
Right. So a couple of us kept saying, like, people kept saying this, and I think one or two people had tried doing it after the dhabas were shut down. We should just open a dhaba. Like, let's just do it. And I think the union had tried actually last year, like, once to make tea at night somewhere, but it didn't really catch on. And then me and my friend Swati kept talking, and we were like, yeah, man, let's just open a dhaba. Let's just open a dhaba. Then one day we were just like, yeah, let's open a dhaba. Why not? So it was me, her, and Sarkdak, our friend Sarkdak. And we were just like, yeah, fuck it, let's just do it. So we went, we got a small, like, gas cylinder. We got a pot, we got a kettle, we got some chai, and we just, like, set it up at the tea plant. And we didn't think it would catch on. We were kind of like, I was kind of like, this is an art piece. Like, this is, like, a weird little performance protest. And everyone's gonna just pass and be like, this is weird. But people like tea. So people came, which was crazy. Like, the first night we did it, and we thought, we really envisioned it, I think, at first as a kind of protest. Like, you don't want us to have chai at night, we'll make chai at night. And as a more performative, like, temporary gesture. But then people actually wanted tea, and they came. And then it developed, and we're like, oh, great, so we can actually keep doing this. And then it developed from that sort of idea that this is a single act of protest, it developed into an ongoing space and also a sort of collectively run project. So very quickly after we, that first night we set it up, people were really into it. And then we sort of encouraged anyone who came, like, yeah, this should be a community space, so you should come whenever you want and make tea. And a lot of people were very interested. And so it quickly got quite busy. And a lot of people quickly started, like, signing up, taking different nights. So within a first couple days, I think we had people who had basically volunteered to run it for the next 2 weeks.
Okay.
And it was...
Where did you set it up?
We set it up at the T Point, which is basically the central intersection in the university, which is a central sort of place where people would be walking at night. And by the T Point, there is Sabarmati Dhaba and 24/7 Dhaba, and they used to be open really late, and so there would be light and noise and action along those routes. And that's the route you have to go if you're going from the library back to a lot of hostels. So after we had a lot of, like, older students saying that, you know, they'd been in JNU for 10 years, but until the dhabas were shut at night, they'd never felt unsafe on campus. And suddenly you're walking back from the library at 2 a.m. and you're alone and it's dark and you're scared.
Yeah.
And so we set it up in that sort of central place so that any women walking by, I mean, not only so that people could have chai, that was kind of a side thing, but so that there was company and there was that activity at night. And also as a sort of take back the night, a way of reclaiming that space, especially for women.
So did you have, like, what was the idea? Like, what were you trying to achieve through it? Like, other than sort of encouraging the sort of mobility and continued sort of, like, a safe place for women? Like,
that was a good question. That was a question that we constantly sort of struggled with. Like, what is the nature of this project?
Yeah.
Because at first we were like, okay, good, we can use this as a space to mobilize, say, a protest toward the reopening of the dhaba. And this kind of reveals, like, the upside and the downside of being a very loose collective. Because it wasn't started by any organization. I'm not part of an organization. Like, some of the other people who helped start it are, but they didn't do it under that umbrella. And it wasn't sponsored by the union. Like, it was a very sort of, a couple people just did it and then it took off in a way. So the sort of collective that ended up running it ended up being quite loose.
Hmm.
And therefore, like, there was not much of an organizational structure to take it toward a protest. We ended up using it as more of like a way to support other protest calls.
Right.
So like, while, for example, we thought, okay, how can we use this toward the demand of reopening the dhabas? Eventually, like, I think we more or less tacitly gave that idea up and instead started thinking of it as a way to simply like keep that space open and sort of keep a certain like collectivity there. And then otherwise, like, we would use it, we would bring it if there was some protest, especially if there was some protest where people were occupying a place for a certain amount of time, we'd bring it there in order to sort of support the protest, draw more people. So in that sense, it, like, I always thought of it as part of this collective project, not only of mobility, but also of nourishment. And I thought that was a really important intervention also in, generally in the political space, but also particularly in the JNU space, because I do think that, like, there is a particular value attached to kinds of protests which can be seen as stereotypically more masculine, so sort of more active physical kinds of protests, which I think are really important. But then I also thought, okay, if we're talking about gender and we're thinking about gender and this movement is about gender, then why would we shouldn't necessarily prioritize like the idea that this will lead to a concrete result in the sense of a movement, and instead think about what is the kind of labor that often happens to support movements. So another aspect of the project was that because we envisioned it being collectively run, like, different people would actually make the tea every night,
right.
But it was expected that everyone came would do labor. So you didn't pay, you donated if you wanted to, and everyone who drank had to wash their cup. And it worked more better and worse depending on the night, but I think that was something we were really committed to because we felt like actually you have to make visible these kinds of labor and you have to require this of everyone. And again, in a time when community really does begin to strain and fray because of a lot of changes and because of that sense of persecution, that's important. I think that was an important norm. And one other thing that I thought was really useful, because like the gender thing was something that you had to constantly struggle with as you made the dhaba, right? We also use it as a sensitization space. So we had a series of workshops. We had some very open discussions. We had some improv, some very participatory kind of very productive sort of exercises. We experimented with not giving men chai until they participated in some kind of gender dialogue. So it became an education space also in that, because the GS Cash had also was supposed to be a sensitization body, which in the past couple of years didn't necessarily happen all the time. And so we thought that, yeah, we should do sensitization here. And in a concrete way, you can also do that. The one thing that was interesting with the dhaba is, like, in several protests we brought it to, like, we brought it to the lockdown, actually. So it was there in the Saw lockdown. We brought it to, there was one night where people occupied the street in front of CBI headquarters. So the dhaba was there. And in all these spaces, like, once you brought the dhaba, you did notice who tended to do these kinds of labor of tending to the protest, of feeding the protest, of washing the dishes. And, of like, more times than not, you know, you realize that, yeah, it's women doing most of the stuff. Even at the lockdown, like, which was a sort of another occupation-type protest that a lot of us participated in, like, it was a 24-hour protest. But who were really getting the food most of the time? Like, most of the time it was women. Who was cleaning most of the time? It was women. So the dhaba was also a tool of bringing out, in our own movement spaces, like, what are those inequalities?
Right. You said we a couple of times, and then you also said that different people were running the dhaba.
Yeah.
Would you say there were some main people who were organizing it every day?
Yeah. So this was the tension between wanting to be like a very open collective, but also having to do a concrete thing.
Yeah.
So like we had in the beginning a sort of open meeting with like anyone interested, where we sort of laid down this system. Like it was a pretty collectively decided system that there would be coordinators every week who would sort of make sure everything, sort of look over the grand aspect of it and make sure it was happening. And then every day different people would sort of sign up or volunteer to run it. My greatest moment of happiness, and so it started with like three of us, and so we were basically there for most of this project ran for like 2.5 months continuously, mm-hmm. and since then sort of sporadically or episodically based on whatever other protests were happening. My happiest moment was after a week or two when I realized I didn't have to be there anymore. Mm-hmm. So realizing it was actually running without me doing much. But definitely, like, because it wasn't run by a, like, there was a very fluid structure. So therefore, like, some people ended up doing a lot more labor than others. Like, I was there, even, maybe I wouldn't be there the whole time every night, but I would usually check in on it every night. It was an interesting experiment in that way also, like, just asking this question of, like, if you have this project, which is supposed to be a community project, like, my test to myself was always, like, if I don't do anything today for the dhaba, if I don't do anything for it, will it still run? Mm-hmm. And if it still runs, then it's a good project.
Okay. And it did.
And it did.
Yeah. Tell me some specific events or memories that you have from the 2.5 months.
There was a night when, basically, like, after we ran it for a while, like, after a couple weeks of running it, like, a lot of, see, in the beginning, because it's such a new thing on the campus, people would come and they'd be very curious why you're doing this. So you could actually talk to every person and talk about the issue of women's mobility itself. But after a while, people just wanted chai. Yeah. So a lot of people would come for chai. And obviously, like, who is out at night, even in JNU campus, who is more comfortable being out at night more? It's men. So disproportionate, and even when we had these all-night dhabas, like, we talk about it as something that was good for gender mobility on the campus, which it was, but they were often very masculinist spaces. Mm-hmm. Like, it's still true that even in a space with improved mobility for women, it's a masculinist space. And yeah. And if you look around JNU campus, there's more women than men on the campus, but there's still more men than women in public spaces on the yeah. campus. So after a couple weeks, we got large crowds and large crowds of men often coming to the dhaba. And some dynamics started developing, which we were really frustrated about, because we were like, this is counter to the entire project. So they'd come and they'd be very demanding. They'd do either one of two things. They'd keep nagging, and it was usually women. Women were the ones who majority sort of ran the show. So a lot of men would come for chai, and women would be making them chai, and they would get a little demanding. They'd all cluster around the table. They'd treat it like a, what we were envisioning it as a community project protest. They would treat it like a business exchange. And we got really, like, frustrated with this, and that's when we sort of amped up the sensitization aspect. And when we experimented with different things, like, you can't get chai until you... There was one night where I made a bunch of chits, so I made a bunch of, like, little slips of paper with the question, how am I making JNU more gender just? And told all men there they can't get chai until they wrote something. Which was really interesting. It led to some conflicts. Like, there was one man who tried to grab the kettle from my hand.
Whoa.
Yeah, like, some men got really outraged, really angry, and tried to grab the kettle. And I was like, okay, this is why. Like, this is the point here. And so I had a lot of conversations with people just being like, and it's so interesting. Like, and one of the other chits read, why are there more men than women at Gorilla Dhaba? And some of the answers we got from men were like, oh, women don't like tea. So you have to get people to think through these things while they're being kind of aggressive to you.
Yeah.
Then another night, this was like, I almost had a meltdown this night. I wasn't there. Pujita actually was sort of running it that night. And there was a group of drunk men who came, and there was a big poster because there was some, you know, very ridiculous Bhagwas event of Baba Ramdev happening on the campus. There was a huge banner, one of those cloth banners advertising the poster, the event. And a couple of these drunk guys came, and they took out a knife and they slashed the banner.
Okay.
And I'm not a fan of Baba Ramdev. And I'm also not someone who is like, vandalism can also be a political act, right?
Yeah.
So it wasn't about that, but it was about the fact that, like, these weren't people who were invested in the space.
Yeah.
They were drunk, they were being very masculine, and the space, like, we were constantly worried about being shut down by the administration.
Yeah.
So we felt like, I felt really angry and frustrated because to them, maybe it seemed like they were being cool and radical and making a statement, but to us, it was just like, men asserting their ownership of that space and thinking they were doing something radical where in reality they were creating a problem that we would have to deal with. Like it did not seem like a particularly political gesture. It was a very like swaggering kind of gesture.
And how was it dealt with?
So that's what. So a bunch of women who were involved in the dhaba had a meeting the next day, and we were like, no men, we're done. No more men. We're not serving men at this dhaba.
And then we, because we were really angry, we were really angry. And I, when I came to sort of take care of the situation, I was spoken to very, I was like really spoken down to by the men who were there. Like, a lot of the regulars who came who were men had seen this happen, but they hadn't intervened. So I really felt like, if you think this is a cool project, but you're not willing to take responsibility for it, then this is not a collective.
Yeah.
Then that's not what this is. So we were really pissed off, and we were like, yeah, let's just close it. And then, I don't know why, but somehow, okay, we had this meeting. By the end, we calmed down. We were like, you know what? Like, we are just going to sensitize the shit out of these people.
Right.
Like, they are going to get ruthlessly sensitized. And so the next day, we basically, like, took the chai-making material itself, made a huge circle, put the chai in the middle of that circle with someone making tea, and proceeded to have, like, an hours-long gender conversation about the incident, what had happened, da-da-da. And the only people who could get tea were the ones who were actively participating in the conversation. So that the next day, we did a very similar thing. It was like, we had an improv, which led to a discussion until 4 or 5 a.m. So they were two very charged, very exhausting days, but I was really proud of us. And I mean, I think some separatism is fine. Like, yeah. If we had denied men chai, that would have been great also. But I was really proud of us that, like, instead of just doing that, which would not have led to engagement, we really forced the men in that space to be accountable to the space and to us. And some really good conversations resulted from that. Like, there was a group of, I think, first year BA students who had come, and they were just sitting there till like 4 or 5 a.m. talking about, you know, mere ghar mein kaise hai, yahan pe kaise hai, harassment kya hai, what do I want you to do if I'm harassed, how do you feel when you're talking to a girl? Like, really good stuff happened.
Tell me about the specifics of, like, how people were informed about the events that were happening. How were they informed in the beginning that you guys were doing this? How did you reach out to people?
So at first we just did it.
Yeah.
And people came by. We'd put a message out that night, which was, like, kind of fun and cryptic. And we got the idea to call it the Gorilla Dhaba just because it was, like, the idea was that we'd move it around, which we didn't end up doing so much, but we ended up bringing it to different protest sites. So in that sense, it was the Gorilla Dhaba. And obviously we also intended it as a, you know, as a kind of struggle in that way. So we sent out just like one, we circulated one WhatsApp message, and I put it on my Facebook with some like very poetic message being like, come feel the night air on your skin. Like, women, beheno aja bahar aapke hostel se, hamare saath aja piyo chai. And so we did that. We circulated that the first night. Then some people came by.
Right.
And so word of mouth also started happening after that. Then every night, we made a WhatsApp group, and every night I, mostly me, other people also, but I would go around and just talk to everyone who was there and get their number and add it to the WhatsApp group. And so over the group was where we coordinated the logistics of it, and also people sort of said what they wanted to do, if they had any event they wanted to put on. If we were putting on an event, we'd send it out. We made a Facebook page and sent everything out from there. And we also often would sit and like sing different protest songs like all night, which was a very beautiful thing. And we'd sometimes, like, make them a little silly and put chai in. And so anyone who was going past, we'd call them.
Nice.
Like, aaja chai piyo, vakt aa gaya.
Nice. So, did you use social media at all? Like, you said, you talked about the first Facebook post.
Yeah. So, we made a Facebook page, like a Gorilla Dhaba Facebook page. And we posted things from there if we had an event or whatever.
On Facebook.
On Facebook. We had a WhatsApp group also where we called people.
Did get any coverage in the media?
Yeah, it did. It did. It was like treated as a kind of, we didn't know how it would be treated, because knowing the coverage of JNU, if they see the name Gorilla in the title, they can be like, oh my god, they're Maoists.
Yeah.
But it was treated more as like a kind of general interest, like, oh, isn't that kind of weird and interesting piece?
Right.
So the coverage was kind of like, JNU students find a way to keep the pot boiling, like, fun like that.
Yeah.
So the coverage was fine. It was, I was actually worried about it because there had been recently a round of raids in the hostels, basically like guards and wardens going in at night, knocking in people's doors. And it had been used, we think the administration had leaked to the media the fact that women were found in men's rooms, which is like a completely normal thing for most of us, but like it can be turned into a scandal, right? In this particular climate. And so that had been leaked, and the media, like a lot of Hindi media especially, had been running like basically stories villainizing like JNU ladkiyan ye karte hai wo karte, they're staying in men's rooms, like,
yeah.
So after that news coverage, like you're never really sure how they'll cover JNU women students because we're often highly sexualized or talked about. I mean, literally have been accused of being sex workers, like, which again, like, to most of us is like not an accusation, but then it's used to sexually shame. So the coverage of the dhaba, we weren't sure if it would be used in that way, but it came out mostly as just like, ha, TK, this is cute.
Did it happen on its own, and did you reach out to the...
No, it happened on its own. I don't know how, actually. I don't know if someone saw a Facebook post and reached out or something like that, but several journalists reached out to us. Several journalists reached out to, like, union people who directed them toward us.
Right.
We didn't actually... Yeah, it just happened.
And this Facebook page, who was running it?
Me, mostly.
What was the reaction of the university administration?
So that was funny because we kept thinking that they would crack down, they wouldn't let us, they'd make us move, da-da-da. And they just didn't. And I still don't know why.
Okay.
I don't know if it was because we were actually just really chota and they had bigger fish to fry, which is, like, possible.
Yeah.
Or if it was that they really thought we'd fizzle out, which we did. But, yeah, they didn't do, like, the first night we set up, the security came by and kind of questioned us, but nothing really happened after that. The security guards liked us because they got tea also.
Oh, okay.
So security, like the security people were really nice. I think even like, I don't know. I think some of the security guards like actually went to bat for us.
Okay.
Not, I mean, not that they necessarily, if the admin wanted to crack down on us, they would. But I think like sometimes the security guards can be hostile, not a student protest. I think this one they personally didn't have any beef with because they got chai, we chilled, there was a fire in winter, all of that. And I really just think the admin thought it was, like, too insignificant to bother about.
Do you think similar experiments were done in other campuses, other spaces?
I mean, it's interesting because, like, we can talk about this as a project that's about labor, for example, in a lot of ways. But then, like, if someone sets up a chai shop on the street, that can also just be their livelihood and, like, a very banal event and, like, not some grand political protest. So the fact that we would even just, like, make chai on a footpath and consider that a protest, like, reveals whatever our level of, like, class privilege is.
Yeah.
So I wonder if, like, it's a very contextual project in the sense that we had that really specific, like, issue with the dhabas being shut. But then this mode of protest has also been used in a lot of places, and just in terms of women's presence at dhabas at night. So, like, in Pakistan, there's the Girls at Dhabas project, right?
Yeah.
I know that Pindra Tor and some of their night marches has ended by, like, sitting at the dhaba late at night. So dhaba as a means of women's assertion is something that we definitely did an event, like, it's already in the political lexicon. In terms of, like, the act of establishing sort of your own dhaba as this collective and, like, women-led project, like, I actually think in Pakistan there are, like, women-owned and
in run
dhaba. Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure. I think so. So yeah, I think it was a mode of protest that is sort of there, sort of floating around the cultural ether, and that, like, it was something that worked and, like, meant something at this particular juncture in this space.
So from what you said earlier, I'm assuming that you weren't targeted by the university administration, nor was anyone else
no.
who was run.
Yeah.
Do you think you were targeted by any other students of the campus? Or any other bodies?
No, I really think people, like, thought it was, how do I say? I think people thought it was kind of just, like, in the same way that the coverage was like, oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
I think students were just like, okay, fine, like, we'll drink chai. I mean, it was interesting because when we first set it up, like, because I'm not from a political organization, I think that after we first set it up, like, I could tell for the first couple of weeks, like, basically people from different organizations would come, like, sniff around and be like, who is doing this project? What is there? Because it's that kind of environment, you know, like, people are always sort of eyeing each other, like, what?
So what is the agenda?
What is the agenda? Is there an agenda? Are they trying to assert themselves and how? Yeah. And I think people were kind of satisfied that it was, like, it had fairly limited ambitions. Not limited ambitions, but that it was, like, I don't know, not, how do I say? Definitely wasn't going to put me in a position where I'd run for any sort of student representative position. But I think that kind of, and even a couple of people from ABVP came and, like, sniffed around. Just to see what was going on.
ABVP is another student organization.
Yeah, as a student, right-wing student organization. Like, the tacit sort of understanding of that space was that it was a lot of people who are sort of more oriented toward, like, left progressive Ambedkarite politics. But a couple ABVP people still sort of came and, like, saw what was happening. I think people were just kind of, like, checking it out. And I think from the admin also, it was just kind of like checking it out.
Yeah.
I became known by like people I didn't, especially like guards that I didn't know as like the Dhaba wali, like the, yeah, the Dhaba one, the Gorilla Dhaba person.
Okay. So what is the status of the Dhabas right now?
So now, like, we basically ran it every night for like 2-3 months in monsoon semester, and sporadically have opened it in this semester. It's not been sustained in the same way. And this semester, basically, the Dhaba Saman has been, the Dhaba stuff has been used in a lot of different protests. So NSUI and set up this blockade of the campus road. Mm-hmm. So they took the Dhaba stuff for like a couple weeks. A couple times there have been various protests at the administrative block this year in assertion of students' sort of right to be there. And so the Dhaba has been taken there. Again, thought of as a sustenance thing, as a way to draw a crowd. During the lockdown, also the Dhaba was used. So I think now at this point, it's more like a resource that's there.
Right. And what about the Dhabas whose timings were shortened? And
they're still closed.
They're still closed.
Yeah.
Okay. How would you evaluate the movement now, in the sense that, would you say that there were any mistakes that you guys made or anything that you would do differently now?
Yeah, I think that I wished then, and I still wish now, like, we did communicate with the Dhaba people, like the owners and workers in the Dhabas that are already on campus, but I wish that we communicated with them a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like we intentionally opened it only after 11 because we didn't want to impact their business negatively in any way, because they had already taken a hit economically from the early Dhaba timings. But I feel like this often happens on the campus, that student activists really think of, even activists with like left and like sort of pro-worker politics, often think of students as like the only or the primary stakeholders on this campus, and don't make alliances with different workers on the campus as sort of equal stakeholders in a movement. And I think that that was a great oversight on our part and something that I regret.
Right. Did something change for you at a personal level after being part of this project?
Yeah, I like used to be terrified of walking around the campus.
Mm-hmm.
Not terrified in terms of my political, like, physical safety, but I got a lot of just like hyper-sexualized attention from men. And I also felt the same thing in like the political space. Like, it was really challenging at first to participate, to just be visible on campus, first of all. And second of all, like, to participate in campus politics. Just, it's challenging in general for women. I think women are sexualized in like different ways depending on their backgrounds. I think as an American woman, I was probably sexualized in a very particular way, which made it challenging to participate. So personally for me, like, it was a very empowering space because it was a project that like I had helped to make reality, which is really empowering. And because it was a space that, even on those nights when like it was overcrowded with men who were being kind of aggressive, like, it was still a space that like women students had control over. And even when we got frustrated about like the crowd or the way that the labor wasn't being distributed equally, like, we still understood that we were running the show, which is, I think, not something that a lot of us felt in other movements in the space. So in that sense, like, even though it didn't really result in Dhaba timings being open, like, GS Cash still isn't there, I think it was an empowering and useful project for sensitization, and also for keeping a particular culture there, and also for like the political formation of a lot of women who were involved in it. Like, there was like a bunch of first year MA women students who came a lot to the Dhaba, and like, I mean, they're just like kick-ass awesome women anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that that was a space where a lot of us like met each other, identified with each other, and like we've since done like a lot of political stuff together,
mm-hmm,
or in solidarity since. So also just as a space for like women activists to like gain confidence, it was really important.
Just to go back to something that you were saying earlier, you said that this sort of shutting down of the Dhabas, you read that as a clamping down on women's mobility. Almost.
Yeah.
Do you think this sort of stuff happens in other, or has happened in other campuses, other spaces?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's really interesting because even in JNU, like, a lot of us, I didn't know this for a long time, but apparently when the hostels first opened, they were completely co-ed. Mm. Like, there was no restriction on men entering women's spaces. And so I have heard about campuses where actually gender norms used to be more open and restrictions were put in place.
Right.
It's kind of a unique situation here because I think most campuses in the Indian context, like, there's already those restrictions in place. Yeah. And so whereas we felt like there was a kind of ability that we had that was taken away and we wanted to get it back, I think a lot of like women's struggles around mobility are for a mobility that they haven't been given thus far.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's also why this protest took a less militant form. Mm-hmm. Like the BHU protests that happened monsoon semester of this year, where women basically shut the whole university down. Like that's a really fabulous like militant upsurge of anger, which I think partly comes from the fact that it's a very restrictive environment and you're just fed up and like you need to assert yourself. And this particular, the Dhaba idea, like I think it was specific to this context because like we felt a sense of loss of freedom. Do you know what I mean? So it was kind of this idea of like keeping that thing alive or keeping that opportunity for mobility there because we felt it was slipping away from us.
Just to finish up, you said you were finishing your MA right now. Tell me about your future plans.
I don't know, Pankaj. I don't know.
Vaguely.
I'm waiting for my MPhil result.
Yeah.
If okay. I don't get my MPhil.
So you applied for MPhil in the same university?
Yeah, I did. If I don't get my MPhil, I will probably go back to America.
Okay.
I do not know what I will do in America, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kuch hoga. I forgot that there are movements there. My entire political education is happening. I'm like, I'm a weird case. Like, really the bulk of my political education has happened here.
Okay.
At this point, I feel more familiar and comfortable with Indian politics and American politics in a lot of ways. So when I go back, I'll have to sort of remake my own sort of political connection to that environment and figure out, like, what kinds of groups I might affiliate with or issues I might want to take up and contribute, struggles I want to contribute to. So that's exciting.
Yeah. Okay. But, thank you, Rena. Thank you.